This is Exposé with your host, Mike Russo, discussing issues of national importance for the next half hour. I have both an email address and a post office box for you to send any comments to about the program or suggestions for topics and speakers. My email address is MikeRussoExpose@yahoo.com, Russo spelled R-U-S-S-O. And my post office box number is 13140 Denver, Colorado, 80201. I'll give those addresses again at the end of the program. I have a famous and prominent guest coming on in a moment who is a prolific author, speaker, and activist, and it is a distinct honor for me to be able to interview him for the next 24 minutes. My guest, David Horowitz, was a far-left communist in the 60s and gravitated to the right in the 70s. He has authored many books, including Radical Son, Shadow Party, The Professors, and The Politics of Bad Faith, to name just a few. He has created the Freedom Center and runs that, as well as lectures throughout the United States. He has been a guest on many TV shows, including O'Reilly, Hannity, Nightline, Good Morning, etc. So, Mr. Horowitz, let's get started by telling the listeners where you're from, grew up, and went to school.
Well, I grew up in New York City, in a neighborhood called Sunnyside in the borough of Queens.
Yeah.
I went to public schools. I graduated William Cullen Bryan High and went to Columbia University.
Mm-hmm.
Graduate years, and then went to Berkeley as a graduate student.
I see. Okay. Well, the first question our listeners would like me to ask you is, what happened between the 60s when you were the editor of Ramparts magazine, far left magazine, and the 70s when you began gravitating toward the right? What changed you? What happened?
There were actually two major events. Of course, you know, one is always hopefully thinking when one is engaged in political causes.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of questions that developed along the way. But in 1974, I should go back a little. When the America pulled out of Vietnam,
yeah.
Actually, when the draft was ended, I saw that the anti-war movement suddenly died, and I realized that it was really an anti-draft movement. These were people, there were some true believers who actually believed that the Vietnam War was an imperialist war and so forth,
should
be opposed. But the vast majority of people who were protesting the war were either young males who didn't want to fight for their country, or their relatives and girlfriends who didn't want to see them go.
Yeah.
The minute the draft was ended, which was around 1970, the war was still going strong, everybody in the anti-war movement, virtually everybody, just abandoned the cause, the Vietnamese, the anti-imperialism, and so forth.
Yeah.
Then in 1974, I raised a lot of money and bought a church in Oakland's inner city for the Black Panther Party.
I see.
They had a school, and I was going to house the school. And I recruited a woman named Betty Van Patter, who was 42 years old at the time and was my bookkeeper at Ramparts. I was editing the largest magazine on the left.
I see.
And I asked her if she'd like to do the bookkeeping for the school, because I had created a tax-exempt foundation to support the school.
Yeah.
In December, actually it was December 17th, 1974, Betty disappeared. And by the time the police fished her body out of San Francisco Bay, 5 weeks later, I knew that they had killed her.
Wow.
I had been interviewed by the police. I had talked to her daughter, just the all the circumstances around her death.
Yeah.
She was last seen leaving a local Berkeley bar with a member of the Black Panther. Anyway, I knew that they had killed her.
I see.
As it happened, that was the 5 weeks would have taken us to February, roughly, or the end of January of 1975.
Yeah.
In January, the Democrats, it was called the Watergate class of Democrats, were elected to Congress, and the first thing they did was to cut off the aid to the Vietnamese who were fighting the communists. America had withdrawn. We had advisors, a few advisors, but our combat forces had been withdrawn in 1973. So in January, the aid was cut off to Cambodia and Vietnam. 4 months later, both regimes fell to the North Vietnamese communists and the Khmer Rouge.
I see.
And the communists then proceeded to slaughter 2.5 million people, while the left did nothing. There were no protests of the one of the largest genocides of the 20th century, and that taught me immediately that the left didn't care one iota about the Vietnamese. The left isn't against atrocities. It's against America.
I see.
As long as the oppressors were communists, American leftists didn't care.
I see.
And it's amazing how long this has persisted. I mean, the leading Democrats now came out of that movement. Howard Dean, Teddy Kennedy was part of it, Bill Clinton, all have the blood, John Kerry in particular, have the blood of the Vietnamese and the Cambodians on their hands and on their heads.
I see.
And they're all proud of it.
Mm-hmm.
They simply have written off all those people.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, that's really when I left the left.
I understand.
Okay. I didn't become a conservative for... Well, I actually even voted for Jimmy Carter in 1980. So it took me 7 or 8 years to become a conservative.
I see.
But I learned then that the left, and if you look at the left today, they are the chief supporters of anti-Semitism, anti-Americanism, supporters of Palestinian terrorists.
Right, right. I read your pamphlets. I read your books.
And so on. The left is a ferociously reactionary force.
That leads us to the next... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, they're driven by... they have this whole mythology that they operate in. It's really a crypto-religion, leftism.
That's my next question, which is, what motivates the far left? Many of their ideas seem to do a whole lot more harm than good.
Yes, hate. Hate.
Really? Really?
They have this delusion of that there's going to be a over the rainbow, there's going to be this world where there's no poverty, no racism, no sexism.
Hatred of what?
Which is a complete fantasy, but it allows them and it stimulates them to hate everybody who stands in their way. That's why when you see conservatives debate so-called liberals who are just leftists, conservatives trying to explain things to leftists, they think leftists, just don't understand basic economics and things like that.
I see.
Whereas when you see the leftists in action, you can see it every night on the Keith Olbermann show.
Yeah.
It's just hatred. They hate
and
conservatives.
They're hating anyone who
Christians.
Stands in their way, then.
Amazing. Look at them. The Christians... give them the heebie-jeebies, but these Islamic Nazis, they're sympathetic to them. Oh, yeah, let's build a mosque at Ground Zero an imam who's a supporter of Hamas Nazis. That's religious tolerance. If the Catholic Church or God forbid, some fundamentalist, some evangelical wanted to build the 100-story building. The New York Times, the Washington Post, all
crazy.
These phony liberals, you know, and rabid, in my view, rabid haters is what they are. Yeah. And, you know, our country is now in the grips of them.
Yeah. Okay, that leads me to my next question, which is your Freedom Center publishes many booklets for sale. And one of the center's booklets that you authored, The Art of Political War for Tea Parties, you state that conservatives can also turn the left's oppression myth around and aim its guns at them. In fact, using the romance of the underdog against the left is the best way to neutralize their attack. Would you elaborate on this point for our listeners? Turning around.
Well, politics isn't about reality. It's about perceptions. If it was about reality, who would vote for a Democrat? Every election year, the Democrats run as fiscal conservatives, patriots, and so forth. When they get in office, all they are about is cutting the military, retreating, appeasing our enemies, apologizing for our imaginary crimes, and raising taxes and spending working people's money. So politics is not about reality. It's about how you frame the issues. The Democrats are terrific at framing the issues. They're always on the side of the underdog, the poor people, minorities. Of course, they're the biggest, the enemies of minorities. Every major inner city school system, which is destroying the lives of millions of poor black and Hispanic children, where they're trapped in these public schools, where teachers are overpaid and underworked, every one of them is 100% controlled by the Democratic Party. Every one of these school systems, every major inner city in America is controlled by the Democratic Party and has been for 100 years. Nobody in his right mind who looks at the facts can think that the Democratic Party are friends of poor people or blacks, for that matter, even though blacks vote 90% of them vote for Democrats.
Yeah.
And look, for people who think that everybody votes in their own interest all the time, consider that Hitler won elections in Germany. And that when Stalin, who had murdered 40 million people, he had killed actually a member of every Russian family, there were millions who had went to his funeral to weep. And 1,000 people were actually trampled to death when they went there. So, you know, I leave it to libertarians and leftists to, well, of course, leftists don't think that people are rational in their own interest. But in any case, the way to turn this around is to take up the side of the underdog. Barack Obama has his boot heel on the necks of black children. There was a voucher bill. The Washington, D.C. public schools are the richest in the country, richest public schools, something like $19,000 per child. Now consider if there are 30 kids in a classroom, that's $600,000 per classroom.
Yeah.
And they can't educate these kids.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
won't. So black parents are desperate to get their kids out of the school system,
sure.
to send them to the schools that Barack Obama sends his kids to, and all these white so-called liberals who send their kids to fancy private schools. But the only people trapped in the public school system, and I'm not talking about the suburbs, which is a different issue, but inner city schools are poor people.
Right, right.
Or I should say large urban school systems like the New York public school system. Very few middle-class kids in that school system.
Okay, I have another question.
Because it's an absolute disaster. And Obama destroyed the voucher program, which allowed these black parents
in the District of Columbia, in D.C.,
could afford a private school.
I know that. It's hard to believe. It's hard to understand. Anyway, okay.
Well, what's hard to understand is the failure of the Republicans to make it a major issue.
They just are lousy at politics. They're just bad politicians. They may know what to do once they're in power, but they politically, I think they are a disaster. It's a shame because a lot of their ideas are good ideas and positive ideas. But let's move on. There's another Freedom Center booklet, Barack Obama's Rules for Revolution, the Alinsky Model, which I read, and in it you state, to understand Obama's presidency, Americans need to know more about the man and the nature of his political ideas. In particular, they need to become familiar with a Chicago organizer named Saul Alinsky and the strategy of deception he devised to promote social change. Now, I've heard people even going further than what I read in your pamphlet, suggesting that to understand Obama, you need to think of him as a con man. Do you find that useful?
Do I find that useful?
Useful. A way of thinking about Obama, deceiving people, lying every time he moves his lips.
Well, I think he's a bigger liar than Clinton. I mean, I think that should be obvious. He ran a campaign pretending he was a centrist, pretending he was going to be pragmatic, and he's a complete ideologue. I mean, he's driven through these programs over the opposition of the people who voted for him.
Yeah.
So I don't think we've had a bigger liar in the White House in my lifetime.
Yeah.
Deception is what they're about. They're radicals. They pretend to be not radical, and then they behave like radicals.
Yeah. By the way, for our audience out there, Saul Alinsky wrote Rules for Radicals, which talks all about how to deceive. And I believe Obama, he taught Rules for Radicals to lots of people as a community organizer there in Chicago. He was one of the chief proponents. He actually not only knew it, he taught it. It's unbelievable. But anyway, in the 1960s, you were what was referred to as a red diaper baby, which I believe means you were the son of communists. Now you're the most effective anti-left activist. I suspect that some of your former far-left friends have tried to make your life difficult for you and your family. Would you comment on that?
Well, we live in a very big country, so it's kind of difficult unless you are obsessed with somebody and want to devote your life to stalking them. I have a lot of enemies on the web. I have a lot of lies printed about me on the web. There's whole websites devoted to attacking me, and I'm not the only conservative that's true of, but
you were so prominent, and that's what made them mad. To them, you were a turncoat. To you, you saw the light, and you were so honest and truthful that you went where the truth and the facts led you. Regardless of whether it was to the left or to the right or exactly where, you went where the truth said you were to go. And I bet you, I know that must drive them nuts. Did you know them more than any other person probably on this plane? You know, you were part of them, so you understand
them. Well, it does
them.
Drive them crazy, and you just deal with it.
Okay. I have a question here. I used to think that George Soros was simply misguided. Then I read the chapter on Soros in your book, Shadow Party, and learned otherwise. Tell us a little bit about the multi-billionaire and far-left financier George Soros.
Well, this is a man who hates America and hates Israel, even though he's a Jew, and has put his money and his connections, and he's a smart man, intelligence, behind the left.
And his money. I mean, that's even more important.
And his money.
A lot of money.
Well,
there's a lot of things that happen in politics which I don't quite understand. And sometimes the only thing I can think of that makes any sense is that, hey, there's probably some Soros money behind that particular issue or idea or whatever. There's Soros money back there. And he has so much money, it's almost unlimited, multi-billionaire. And when you hear him talk, it sounds like, you know, he really wants to do good and do what's right. But, God, it just...
Well, I mean, look, the left has mastered that. They all sound like that.
Yeah.
You just listen to them and they don't look at what they do.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, why do they want to desecrate Ground Zero and provide a headquarters for radical Islamists that hate Christians, hate Jews, hate atheists, and want to destroy this country? Oh, it's a matter of religious tolerance. They're very liberal-minded. And you could tell... look, last week, a black man, a racist, who said that he was angry at white people, killed 8 innocent white people.
Right, right.
Not one of them did he have a personal gripe against. So here's a black racist kills 8 white people. First of all, most people don't even know that happened. Second of all, if you read the AP or the other liberal so-called accounts of it, it's all sympathy for the shooter. You know, the hard life he lived, the racism he lived.
Yeah, in New York Times, yes.
You know, it makes you sick, but this is the way. You know, you have these Palestinians who are Nazis, whose leaders, the creators of the Palestinian National Movement, were aides of Hitler and supported the Holocaust. The State of Israel was created out of the Turkish Empire. Not an inch of Arab land involved. It was created the same way Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, and Jordan, they were all created out of the ruins of the Turkish Empire.
Yeah.
On 3 tiny slivers of land, they were attacked by the Arabs. The Arabs have conducted a 60-year war against Israelis, against Israeli civilians. In the history of warfare, there has never been a people that has used such evil tactics and been so proud of them for so long. For 60 years, they tried to make the territory around the Jordan Jew-free, just the way Hitler tried to make Europe Jew-free. This ethnic cleansing has the support of the New York Times, the Washington Post, and, of course, the MoveOn.org communists and their friends.
And United Nations. I read in your book, Obama and the War Against the Jews, that there were 322 resolutions in the United Nations General Assembly.
United Nations is a pawn of the, condemning Israel.
And not one condemning the Arab states.
Well, of course, because the Arab Nazis control the UN. I mean, it's just beyond me how people, well, it's not. I mean, you know, historically, you understand how people have their head in the sand.
Sure, sure.
That's how Hitler arose and conquered.
Right.
People wake up, but they wake up very, very late. And, you know, half of America is asleep on this issue.
Right, well...
And of course, Europe, went to sleep a long time ago. That's why we had to bail it out in two world wars.
Well, we have about a minute and a half left, and I want to get this one last question in. The left has unions, has universities, university professors, the mass media, African-Americans, legal aliens, two-thirds of legal aliens vote Democrat. It seems to me you line up all these people. It makes for a very formidable adversary. Is there any hope?
But we have everybody else.
Is that good
Only
enough?
They haven't waked up yet fully.
Is it good enough?
I wouldn't waste my time arguing with leftists, if you can help it.
Right, right.
But you need to wake up the decent people in this country.
You think maybe that's what's happening now with the Tea Party movement? You think
Obama has done a great service in waking people up to the menace of people like Obama and the so-called progressive left.
Yeah. Well, let's hope so, because I think we need to change course somewhere or other pretty soon. I'm not sure we can take a couple more years of Obama. Hopefully, we'll just have a couple more months of this particular Congress, but they can still do a whole lot of harm in those few months. Well, anyway, before we go, would you give our listeners the Freedom Center's website so that they can check it out.
Yeah, it's frontpagemagazine.com. You can get to, I have about 5 websites. You can get to all of them through frontpagemagazine.com.
All one word, frontpagemagazine.com. Okay, well, thank you very much, David and Mr. Horowitz. It's been a pleasure and an honor for me, and so many thanks to you for being one of my guests today. You take care, and thank you again.
All right, thank you.
Well, thank you, audience, for spending some time with me this morning. Next week, I'll be recuperating from knee surgery, so we'll repeat the program where Al Scott and I discussed the economic mess that the country's in. You can email me at MikeRussoExpose@yahoo.com, Russo spelled R-U-S-S-O, or you can, if you prefer written mail, you can write me at Post Office Box 13140, Denver, Colorado, 80201, and give me any comments about the program or suggestions for topics and guests. Until next week at 7:30 a.m. on KNUS 710 Radio. This is Expose with Mike Russo. Have a good week.